Welcome to Chapter 14 on Second Aorist Verbs. The aorist verbs dominate the New Testament. They're used more frequently even than the present tense. We're taking the second aorist verbs first because the way you form the second aorist is very similar to what we've seen in the imperfect. You tag an augment on the front and secondary endings on the back, and you've got it. Well, maybe not really have it. There's one other little subtle trick that takes place with these second aorists that we'll have to catch. But let's begin with the Lord's Prayer before we tackle this major background workhorse of the New Testament. Say the Lord's Prayer with me. Pater heimon ha en tois uranois hagias theto ta anamasu. Altheto he basileia su genetheto ta thelema su. And today we'll add another section onto this Lord's Prayer. First, let's just talk through this. Hos is as, en urano, in heaven, kai, usually translated and, but here probably adjunctive, also, epiges, on earth. And it goes like this. Hos en urano, kai epiges. Little syncopation there. Let's try it one more time. Hos en urano kai epiges. Now the next line begins with tan artan, that's bread, and then hemon tan. Hemon artan is our bread. So we've got tans on both sides of this one. We don't actually translate the article here. We just say bread. We don't say the bread. And it goes like this. Hos en urano kai epiges. Tan ar tan, hemon tan. Try that one more time with me. Hos en urano kai epiges. Tan ar tan, hemon tan. And then the third line is epiusion, which is daily. Das is give. Hemin is us, give to us, our dative first-person pronoun. Semeron, today. And the rhythm for the third line goes like this. Epiusion das hemin semeron. Try that again, the third line. Epiusion das hemin semeron. Now put it all together and say it with me. Hos en urano kai epiges. Tan ar tan, hemon tan, epiusion das hemin semeron. And one more time, saying it all the way through. Hos en urano kai epiges. Tan ar tan, hemon tan, epiusion das hemin semeron. We'll practice that, and you'll come to it. Now, in order to prepare for the aorist tense, let's review a little bit how we do the past tense in English. Usually, the past tense in English is formed by tagging an ed onto the end of a verb. So, for example, I talk, present tense, to Zach about basketball. Put that in the past tense, I talked, ed, to Zach about basketball. That goes into the past tense. So we see other verbs like walk becomes walked, jump becomes jumped, look becomes looked, laugh becomes laughed, etc. So we just put an ed on the end. And that's how the first aorist is going to be. There's going to be a little shift in the ending, and that'll be our first aorist type of way of doing things, where you just modify the inflections that go on the verb. But that's not the only way we form the past in English. In English, we can also form the past by changing the root of the verb. So, for example, we have I swim in the pool, present tense. How do we go to the past? Not by adding the ed, but by rather saying I swam in the pool. That becomes our past tense. And there are numerous verbs that have this kind of internal change on the inside of the verb rather than tagging the ed on the outside. So, for example, we have run becomes ran. write becomes wrote, drive becomes drove, etc. So the second aorist will have this internal change of the verb, which will indicate that it's a second aorist, not a first aorist, similar to the difference between our ED-ended verbs and our internal changed verbs. The internal changed verbs will be our second aorist types. The root will actually change, and that will be some tricky business. Let's just get a little overview here. The aorist tense forms are the most frequently used of the verb forms in the New Testament. The present tense is used about 5,534 times, but the aorist is used about 5,877. It's about 300 more times in the present. And the aorist will be a background tense. It'll be the kind of the base norm for most of the narratives and things. They'll use the aorist tense as kind of the base, and then when they want a foreground material, they'll go to the present tense or something like that. So the aorist is going to be our background base level tense in the New Testament. Now, the imperfect and future are only used about 1,600 times each, so you can see the difference here in the prominence of the aorist tense forms. Now, the first aorist tense forms are formed by simply adding a sigma alpha, on the backside before you put on the secondary endings. So that'll be like our ED on the end of the verb. By the way, the second aorist and the first aorist are going to mean the same thing. There's no difference otherwise than talked and ran. You don't make a difference between those just because of the way you formed the verb. They're both past tense. Kind of like our declensions being first declension, second declension, third declension. It doesn't matter which declension. The declension just tells us how it's formed. It doesn't change the meaning of the genitive, dative, accusative, depending on what declension it's in. Same thing here. First aorist and second aorist, both are going to be taken the same way, but they're formed differently. The second aorist will add an augment on the front, and then there'll be this tricky stem change. And these you'll just have to master. It's going to require some memory work, particularly on about five or six of these really tricky ones. And then at the end, you add the secondary endings, just like you did in the imperfect. So it's just augment plus secondary ending with this root stem change for the second aorist. Now let's just talk some about the aorist as a tense. We're going to take the aorist as kind of undefined action in the past, as opposed to the imperfect, which was more durative action in the past. So the aorist would be he loosed versus the imperfect he was loosing. The aorist indicates that it simply happened. Now, as far as time goes, the aorist can reference past events. Oftentimes does. But it can also reference present events, like in an epistolary aorist where the person is writing and he says, I wrote to you, but he's actually writing then, but he uses the perspective of his readers rather than his own perspective. Or sometimes the aorist can even be used for the future. So again, we've got to keep the tense time connection rather loosed. There are also timeless aorists, or nomic aorists, things like all have sinned. Okay? Always true. Not saying it just happened in the past and doesn't happen now. It's always true. It's a nomic aorist, timeless. And so the aorist tense can be used for past, present, future, or this timeless kind of way of looking at the verb. The time of the verb will actually depend, as we've seen before, on prepositional indicators, conjunctions, adverbs, various ways of indicating the actual time of the happening will come largely from outside the verb, and the verb will coordinate with that. It also may depend on what the verb root is. In other words, if it's an epistolary aorist, it a lot of times have to do with the word grapho, to write. And so the lexeme, or the root verb form, may also affect how the aorist is to be taken and its relationship to time. So loosen up that tense-time connection, realizing it's very flexible, but normally we will just simply translate the aorist tense as something that simply just happened, undefined, it happened. And that's how we'll translate it for simple sentences in our workbook. But as you get out into translating in paragraphs and in discourses, You have to be aware of the possibilities of these other nuances coming to play as the aorist tense interacts with these other conjunctions, prepositions, and adverbs. Now, the action sart of the aorist, it can be inceptive, that is, announcing the beginning of the action of the verb, punctiliar, a lot of times is punctiliar, or consummative, as an event or action is consummated. Often, however, it's just simply undefined action. It simply happened, and not much comment beyond that. It's a background tense, not bearing a lot of semantic weight with it. Now, the aspect of the aorist tense is that it's more complete, undifferentiated, as opposed to the immediacy and the particulars of the present tense. It's got an external point of view of the whole. So it's kind of like the parade is happening, and rather than us being down like the present tense, right next to the parade and watching all the particulars as the parade passes by, this is seeing the parade from the 10th story of the building and seeing the whole parade externally, complete, undifferentiated, generally. It's a background tense form. Okay, how do we actually build these second aorist forms? As we've said before, this is a stem change aorist. And so the stem will just have to be learned. But the movement around this stem is fairly easy. We begin with an augment, like we've seen with the imperfect already. You've got the root verb stem. There's a connecting vowel, either an omicron or an epsilon, and then the secondary endings are tagged on the back. So, for example, we have the epsilon in the front of lab is the root stem verb, and the omicron is the connecting vowel, and the nu is the first person ending. So it's elaban, which means I took or received. Did you recognize lambano here? You see that lab is the change in the root from lambano. Now, the connecting vowels will simply be, as we had before, the omicron before the mu-nu and the epsilon elsewhere. So there's nothing new there as far as the endings and the augment. Let's look at four ways that the augment is added. As we've seen before a consonant, the augment is consistently the epsilon. So before a consonant, no problem. Just stick an epsilon on the front. That's how you augment. For the vowel, it's a little more complicated because you're adding an epsilon, and when the epsilon hits with the other vowels, it does kind of these gymnastics. And I want to just simplify that into four different moves that the epsilon makes here. When the epsilon is augmented on an alpha, epsilon, or omicron verb form, it simply lengthens that vowel. So, for example, epsilon plus alpha goes to an eta. An epsilon plus an epsilon also goes to an eta. And the epsilon plus an omicron goes to an omega. So basically the forms lengthen for the alpha, epsilon, and omicron. We kind of would expect that, though. Now, that the vowels that stay strong and stay themselves are iota, upsilon, eta, and omega remain unchanged. So the epsilon, when you add the epsilon in the front, it kind of gets eaten up by these vowels. Iota, upsilon, eta, and omega. So, for example, epsilon plus iota simply remains an iota. The epsilon plus the eta simply remains the eta. The epsilon-upsilon combination reduces to an upsilon. So the iota, upsilon, eta, omega simply stay themselves, and the epsilon is simply bounced off these stronger vowels here. Now, the diphthongs do their own thing, but the diphthongs follow a fairly regular pattern. You have the subscripting diphthongs. So, for example, the epsilon is added onto A, epsilon iota. It becomes an eta with an iota subscript. Similarly, the epsilon iota diphthong becomes an eta with an iota subscript. And the epsilon plus oi diphthong becomes an omega with an iota subscript. You'll kind of notice the similarity between these subscripting diphthongs and the alpha, epsilon, omicron that lengthen in our first way of looking at the vowels. Then there are diphthongs that simply lengthen. You have the epsilon added to the au, alpha, upsilon diphthong, and it becomes eta, upsilon. Similarly, you have epsilon added to the u diphthong, and it becomes the eta, upsilon. So basically, they keep on the au and u forms, they keep the upsilon, but they lengthen the first vowel, which is what we'd expect from our first rule under the vowels there. The alpha goes long and the epsilon goes long. So the diphthongs are fairly consistent with what we'd expect. Don't obsess over these. I don't want you to memorize this, but I do just want you to be aware of the kind of the gymnastics that some of these vowels will go through when the epsilon augment is added on the front. Largely, it lengthens them. Some of them stay strong and swallow. And the diphthong's subscript, if it's got an iota at the end, if it's got an upsilon at the end, basically the vowels just go long as we would expect. So no big deal, but just be aware of this is what's happening when an augment is added onto a verb that starts with a vowel. This will be similar when we get to the aorist tense also. They will also use an augment, so the same process will be used. No big deal, but just keep these things in mind. Let's look at the second aorist active paradigm. Elaban is I took. Elabes is you took. Elaba is he, she, it took with the movable nu. You'll notice this is the NSA endings that we've seen before with the epsilon augment on the front with the root form of lambano being lab. The plural similarly is elabamen, we took, elabate, you plural took, and elaban, they took. As in the imperfect, the first person singular and third person plural are exactly the same forms. You'll notice that our endings are the secondary active endings, NSA, men to N, that we've learned before. So there's not a lot new here. The augment plus the secondary endings is the same as the imperfect. The only difference is that the imperfect is built off the present stem, whereas the second aorist is built off the second aorist stem. Otherwise, they're formed exactly the same way. Not too bad. Now, the second aorist middle, notice the aorist has a separate passive form, as does the future. But for the middle, we have egenamein, from ginomai, actually. I became. Egenu, you became. Egenata, he, she, it became. And then for the plural, egenamatha, we became. Egenestha, you became. Agenanta, they became. And so you see the middle endings that we've already learned. Main, u, eta, amatha, estha, anta, with the imperfect. We've got the epsilon augment on the front. And ginomai, with the root change, becomes the gamma, epsilon, nun, the gen form that the endings and the augment are added to. So this is the middle, largely translated in an active way, emphasizing the subject's participation or the benefit for the subject in the action of the verb. All right, this is where the rubber meets the road, and this is the toughest part of the second aorist, these crazy root changes. And so we've got 10 bad boys here. Particularly the first five are ones that I want you to know cold. The other ones you should be able to recognize and actually deduce. Blepo, I see, becomes Adon, I saw. And you can see the difference between blepo and Adon. There's been a little bit of a shift there. And actually what happens is you get the form Adon, you've got a no to connect it back to I saw, blepo or horao. Now Lego does something similar. It goes to apon, I said. And it also has almost no consonants or vowels similar between the two forms. So you just have to know apon is the second aorist of Lego. Erkamai is going to be one of our big bad boys. and it goes to Aelthon in the second aorist. I came or went. Again, you'll see no similarities between the consonants of the one and the other, but Erkemai is used so very frequently, you've just got to know Aelthon is the second aorist of that. Ginnomai, as we saw before, becomes Aganamain, keeping its middle form there, some call deponent. And that one, at least you've got the gamma and the nu together, the iota going to apparently an epsilon, but you've got some things to work with, so this one's not too deceptive. Gnosko becomes Egnon, and you see the gamma and the nu go together with Gnosko. So a lot of words will have a gamma nu, a gnosis, even the Gnostics that you find in church history, built off this gnosko verb, the collapsing of the gamma and the nu together. So whenever you see a collapsed gamma and nu together, think gnosko. Whenever you see the gamma and nu separated by an epsilon or whatever, think ginnomai. So you got to keep those two straight. Lambano becomes elaban, as we saw. And again, this one's not too difficult. You've got a lambda, you've got a beta, and so you can usually figure out this is lambano. Heurisko, I find, becomes Huron. Similarly, this has a rough breathing mark on the initial diphthong followed by a rho, so this one's not too tough. You can usually figure out that this is Heurisko. Huron, I found. And the ones I want you to learn cold are the first five bad boys here. The blepo to Adon, lego to Apon, Erkemai to Aelthon, Ginnomai to Aganamain, and Gnosko to Egnon. The rest we should be able to deduce. Now six more of these bad boys here. We've got Balo, I cast, becomes Ebalon, I threw. Again, the beta and the lambda make this one fairly easy to figure out. Echo becomes Escon. I have becomes I had. Escon. That's truly strange, but after you see it a few times, you can usually figure it out. Apathnesko, I die, becomes Apethanon, I died. Again, there's quite a few things similar there, and so just be aware of some little shifts in that form. Op Erkemai becomes Op Aelthon. We learned before that Erkemai becomes Aelthon. So you stick the op on the front just as you would the Erkemai. I departed. Ace Erkemai, I enter, becomes Ace Aelthon, I entered. And Ex Erkemai, I go out, becomes Ex Aelthon, I went out. And these aorist forms with Erkemai with the various prepositions on the front will be very frequent. We will see so much of Aelthon that it'll become second nature to you. If you ever have real difficulty and get stuck on the second aorist principal part, you can always go to Appendix number 4, which is the verbal principal parts, and it will lay out the principal parts, starting with the present, going to the future and aorist and perfect, etc., lays out the five principal parts. So Appendix number 4, the verbal principal parts, will give light to your eyes. Now for the vocabulary of chapter 14. Our first word is haima, and it means blood. The second word is iro, and it means I raise or take up. The third word is didasko, and it means I teach. The fourth word is idias, aan, and it means one's own. The fifth word is kalas, aan, and it means good. The sixth word is mellow, and it means I am about to or intend. The seventh word is hadas, and it means way. You'll notice that this is an omicron ending noun, a second declension noun that's feminine. So this is an interesting form, a second declension feminine, hadas. The eighth word is palus, pale, palu, and it means much or many. Comes over in English as pali. The ninth word is soma, and it means body. And the tenth word is psuche, and it means soul or life.